Welcome to the Kosafa Show with Mark Gleason and Nick Say.
On this week's Kosafa Show podcast, we speak to Sean Bishop, who's renowned in the field of coaching methodology and talent development, and is currently at Belgian champions Union Saint-Gilloise. Sean will be a speaker at the upcoming Kosafa High Performance and Coaching Seminar Series, where he'll present on national team pathways and modern football trends. This is a especially pertinent subject as we prepare for the CAF African Schools Football Championship Kosafa qualifier that will be staged in Stellenbosch next month, where the top players in the under 15 age group from around the region will get their first taste of international football. Sean is a leader in his field and offers insights into how countries can develop young players they have at their disposal, and believes the Southern African region is rich in available talent.
Let's talk about your the seminar that you're going to be helping Kosafa with, and I see that you'll be talking on the topic of national team pathways and modern football trends. I presume that's two different subjects, right?
Well, actually, no, because your national team players now have to be, even at youth level, have to be competing at the highest domestic levels that they can. And unfortunately, I think it's our responsibility to educate the public and the people that, you know, you can go on social media and you will see the wonderful work Walter Steenbock did with SAFA, with the TDS schemes, getting these under 15 boys into these tournaments, the ones who are now in Qatar. And it's very important to understand that to go to a tournament like the World Cup in Qatar, it's very difficult for a young boy who at 17 years old is maybe playing amateur football in the Eastern Cape, and he's the best player in the Kasi Games in December, but then the public want to know why he's not going to a World Cup. There's many factors, and we the public need to understand these things, that you know, the long-term development of a young footballer starts at 9, 10 years old. Malibongwe Khoza, who's now in the first team of Mamelodi Sundowns, joined Sundowns at 10 years old. And people will say, yeah, but, you know, you can discover talent at 19, 20. Of course you can. But them playing at the highest level, at the Champions League, is very, very far between, because they haven't had the development outside the white lines, outside the football pitch, that enables them to succeed. The educational development, the mental resilience, the family support, the club support, all these things that need to be added to a player so that they can develop into a national team player. So modern football trends, it's getting more and more and more difficult to become a professional footballer. I know people will say, you know, the talent will get you there, and it's common that talent will get you into the dressing room, but discipline and everything else will keep you in the change room. So the modern trends within football, and what I see here in Europe, and what is happening around the world, these players that are joining these national team programs are already earmarked to be in the senior national teams within a few years. We have an example now. We've got Keletso Mokgawa has just received his first Bafana call-up. But how is that possible? He was in the World Cup squad in 2019 in Korea, in the under-20s. It's taken him nearly seven years to get into the senior national team. For me, that's a big concern. And all the factors that play outside of these the actual football on the pitch are the most important factors, to be honest.
So in a country like South Africa, where it's perhaps a little bit of an anomaly, or certainly way behind in terms of the European trends, it is a country that almost has a reputation for players who arrive at a late stage. And I could quote you a few examples of someone who would have debuted at 27 and went on and played overseas and played for Bafana, although they're few and far between. But what percentage at the moment is a country like South Africa looking at in terms of players who are on that right pathway, that pathway that you described that Khoza has followed?
Well, of course, it requires a lot of effort and input and dedication and resources from from clubs like Mamelodi Sundowns, where Khoza has been at for his whole career. There are a number of other players that are now knocking on the door of the first team at Mamelodi Sundowns. Ben Mokwena, that is recently just signed with the senior team and is playing in the Diski, is doing so well in the national teams, is also a boy who has been at the club since he was 11 years old. So guys like Mandla Mazibuku, who, rest in peace, and Sam Bata, that are recruiting these boys at these young ages, knowing that there's a long-term development plan. There's a boy now at the Under-17 World Cup, Mpumetsi Malinga, that's playing in the Under-17 team. He came to the club as a 10-year-old in our Sunday program. So he's only turning 16 now. Already we're 6 years down the line with him, playing in a World Cup, Under-17 World Cup. And he should progress to the Under-20s, Under-23s, and then Bafana. So, yeah, it's a 12 to 15-year program. So it takes a lot of work from the federation, the clubs, everyone involved, his parents, his cousins, the family, to make sure that this kid succeeds. So now if you look at someone like Mohamed Kota that has gone to Etifak, of course, he had a little bit of an inside there because the Bafana national team performance coach is at Etifak, Kopano Malisi, and we were both asked about him, and he has a lot of talent, and he's doing really well in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. And our public have a huge misconception about football in Saudi Arabia. The level's higher than it is in South Africa. Oh, that's
sure.
A fact.
Well, I'm sure. Just look at the names.
People, it's a fact. Even the academy systems. The academy system in Saudi Arabia, in the Middle East, far exceeds what we have in South Africa. An example, the Under-21, Under-18, Under-17, Under-16, and Under-15 league in Saudi Arabia is a national league. So every weekend, your under-15 boy is climbing on an aeroplane and he's flying 4 hours to go play a game, and then he flies home. So, and this is all funded by the federation. So those five top leagues in Saudi Arabia, the 36 professional clubs in Saudi Arabia, in the Premier League and in the First Division, is a national league. You sometimes fly 4 hours to go play a game at under 15. So their competition already is at a higher level than ours. The talent is exceptional. It's exceptional.
And this is local. This is local talent, not imported talent.
So they have a huge influence from Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, the UAE, Syria, Egypt, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco. They have all these nationals within the country that are playing in these leagues. So they have a huge diversity as well. The talent that's there is exceptional. So you can tell that already for someone like Mohau to be playing in the Roshan Pro League, it's exceptional. That is, he's an outlier. He's actually an outlier. So as you said, they bring in Joao Felix. I mean, a player, he was the most expensive youth player ever sold. He's now playing in the Pro League. And the level is high. The stadiums are always full. So for someone like Mohau there, he's just going to gain unbelievable experience. And at Etifak, he'll be around players like Genie Wijnaldum, who I've never met someone with that mindset before. He's just a top professional. So he really is going to be surrounded by players that are going to add value to him.
So just back to that question. So in terms of South Africa and maybe the other Southern African countries, what's the percentage of young boys who are actually on the right pathway? Is it looking good? Is it 25%, or is it looking bad? Is it still 5-10% who are on a proper pathway, and the rest are kind of just joining in as they go along incidentally? What would your guesstimate be?
So So yeah, for me, I mean, as I say, like the development of a player is holistically, it should be many contributing factors for a player that they can perform, nutrition, sleep, all those sort of things that are just a given. But I think in South Africa, we have an unbelievable amount of talent. We really do, like natural talent. So first and foremost, the first challenge is that nobody watches the games in South Africa from Europe from the PSL.
Yes.
Why? It's not available.
Yes.
The Y Scout deal with the PSL hasn't existed for 3 years. It's just been renewed. Why would a scout fly 12 hours to go watch a football match and the video isn't available for him to review on platforms? So that's the first problem. So like someone will say to me, yeah, but Emil Witboy is a top talent for Europe. Of course he is. I know that because I've seen him play. But someone at Sporting Lisbon who will say, all right, I want his videos. Do you know there's only 155 minutes of Emil Witboy on Y Scout right now?
That's a tragedy.
155 minutes. No club is going to sign a player on 155 minutes of video footage. So these are the challenges that are now in South Africa. And it's the facts. It's the reality. Anyone can say, yeah, but that's not true. They can ask the club for the video footage. But clubs want to climb on Y Scout, on Huddle, on Sci Sports, and watch the video platforms, watch the video of these players. If they are satisfied, they will come and watch the player in their natural environment and make decisions from there. But right now, that is not available for clubs overseas. And for me, that is the biggest stumbling block right now, why players are not moving overseas from South Africa. So these sort of platforms are important for the scouting recruitment. An example, why Cassius can move to Europe is because his games were available on the platform from North Africa.
Yes.
So these are the things that need to be fixed. I know the GDL, I sometimes still watch it on a Saturday on the SuperSport Soccer Schools app, and they're doing amazing work being able to broadcast and make these things available. But somehow they have to find a way that these global platforms have access to this footage and are able to identify the players. Because unfortunately, then they will not move. As I was saying, is we have so much talent in across the GDL and all the clubs, Chiefs, Pirates, Sundowns, SuperSport, those sort of clubs. They have to be given the opportunity, and if they get an opportunity to play in the first team as quickly as possible at 17, 18 years old. I know Y Scouts have done the deal with the PSL now, and this footage should be available in the next year or two. Then these players will be able to move. So, I think it's something that needs to be worked on. All the countries in the CASAFA region, Zimbabwe, Zambia. I try and watch as much football from Zambia as possible on Facebook or YouTube. So all these things need to get onto these platforms.
Is there also maybe sometimes the clubs are a little bit, I wouldn't use the word greedy, but they want a bit of buck for their investment, and sometimes do you feel the South Africans might be pricing themselves out of the European market? The Europeans are looking for a little bit of a bargain when they come down south?
I think so, but there's always solutions to that, Mark. There's sell-on clauses, And for me, I think a sell-on clause for a club means you stay invested in your product. So let's say Mark is a 18-year-old boy who's about to go to Europe and play in an entry-level league, because to get into the top five is very difficult. To get into England, almost impossible. Though we have Lyle there and Camden, but Camden has... his parents have English passports, so that's why he's there. So if a player like Mark at 18 enters a league, let's say in Serbia, and he performs well, but you keep a 50% sell on for his next two sales. You are always going to be looking after Mark in Serbia as a club. You will make sure that he's performing. You will eventually, Mark signs for Lille in France for 5 million euros, and you have a 50% sell on. It's 2.5 million euros you're expected to get 5 years after he's left your club.
Yes.
That is the long-term idea that our club should be looking at. But yes, of course, they won 3 million euros up front for a player that's played 155 minutes in the PSL. And that is not going to happen, because they can then go to Nigeria or Ghana and get, for 300,000 euros, a player that's played in their top division the whole season. So, yeah, it's we are developing the product, but we are not finding solutions on how to market it or sell it.
Can I ask you for some thoughts then on Southern African football in general? I mean, you did a lot of scouting around. Are there still rough diamonds lying in the ground, or is that all a little bit of wishful thinking? And where can the region possibly?
Absolutely. Yeah, there of course there is. There's so much talent in Angola, Zambia, Botswana, Zimbabwe. I mean, I remember I saw Patson Daka as a 16-year-old in Bulawayo. They are everywhere, and Mozambique, even in countries like Lesotho and Swaziland, there is talent. It's a natural talent. The kids are not obsessed with cell phones. They can't afford them. They cannot buy them. So the best thing to do is play football on the streets. So they have a natural ball mastery and an affinity for the ball. So, yeah, they are everywhere. And they just need opportunities and a pathway, a long-term pathway for these kids to develop.
How quick could a country put together a decent pathway that you know, that incorporates, obviously, let's take a Lesotho, for example. It's a little easier these days to get to the World Cup, although it's very, very difficult still. You've got to come through the regional qualifying. But, you know, with the right will and a little bit of cash, do you think a country like Lesotho, with the size of Lesotho, could put something sort of profitable together?
Yeah, I think they could. Imagine you do a nationwide drive. On, say, you look to bring in 60 10-year-olds into a boarding school and a high-performance football program. Within 6 years, I think you could qualify for a World Cup, under-17 World Cup, as you said, with the expanded format. And at the same time, you look at the diaspora, you advertise for people who are grandfathers, were Lesotho nationals, and you're playing outside all over the world. Cabo Verde, I mean, everyone keeps joking that they qualify for a World Cup, but this is exactly what they've done. They've gone to the diaspora and said, who by any chance has a grandfather that was born in Cabo Verde in the 1900s? Oh, me, by the way. And they recruited Morocco doing it now.
Algeria, with, Algeria started it.
Algeria. They have a huge, the Morocco have a huge community here in Belgium. And a lot of them are French or Belgian nationals who now playing for Morocco. So I think it's something that could be done. If a federation funded something like that, and then you cycle the you make sure that you have two cycles running at the same time, an under-17 and an under-20 cycle running at the same time, and you prepare to wait 15 years, and then that's the solution. Unfortunately, you said the word is we're looking for a quick solution, yeah. It's not. We have an unbelievable group with our under-20s, under-17s. Coach Molefe and I had an amazing group in the 2015 World Cup. And you look at that group now it's difficult to swallow that many of those boys, though they're playing professional football, are not playing in Bafana. We let them down. We have let them down.
I looked at that team list of the. You talk about the only South African side who'd been to a previous under-17 World Cup. And I looked at that. Yes. I looked at that lineup, and Reeve Frosler and one or two other names compete, but the attrition rate is very, very high. Why?
The support outside the white lines is the most important. Unfortunately, you have Wise Man Maiwe there with his car accident. It's unfortunate. And then you've got the other players there, Malibongwe Khoza, Reeve Frosler, Notre Noble, players that really, really should have kicked on and were at the best at 16, 17 years old. I think from the 2019 World Cup, the one that has kicked on really was, of course, Lyle Foster and Oswin Apollos. But these guys should have been in the national team set up a long time ago. So these are things that we need to do as coaches and as administrators, as the football clubs, and to make sure that these boys get into the national teams as soon as possible. And there's, I mean, for example, this FIFA window, Bafana have one friendly game, right, against Zambia. Every other country in the world is playing three friendly games.
Yeah, and the national coach said that he didn't want to overload the players, and my reaction as an observer would be, well, surely a second friendly gives you a chance to look at the other guys who don't get a normal Bafana chance. So that would seem to me to be a little foolish.
Yeah, absolutely. You have youngsters like Keegan Allen and AmaZulu who keeps getting a call-up for the preliminary squad, but of course not getting into the main squad because of the quality that's ahead of him. But as you rightly say, you know, send the others home for a rest and some nice time with their families and see what the others can do and have plan B, C and D in case, you know, someone gets a yellow card and is suspended. So, yeah, this is what the rest of the world are doing. And we have to take cognizance of that and be aware of it. Yeah, sure, I know it's overload for the technical staff and the administrators and everything. But maybe if the coach wants to take some rest with his family, there's assistant coaches. And this is about the management of the environment within the national teams. So, it's surprising that we're only taking one friendly and give others an opportunity.
That's it for another CASAFA show. Don't forget you can listen to more of our podcasts at the CASAFA YouTube channel and on Spotify and iTunes. You can also get the latest news at our website, www.casafa.com.